Carolyn Stefanko was inaugurated as president of the College of St. Rose in April of this year. Just a few months later, she proposed changes, including program cuts to academic offerings at the Albany Private Liberal Arts College. As the college works to identify the best ways to reduce a $9 million deficit and boost enrollment. She discussed the specifics of her recommendations with trustees 2 weeks ago. While no specific cuts or increased areas of spending were announced, a statement noted the college had refinanced its debt and lowered its borrowing costs, eliminated 40 staff and administrative positions, 23 of which were filled, eliminated contingency budgets, and reduced spending for employee benefits and other areas. We should note that while the trustees met on the Friday before Thanksgiving, faculty, students, and alumni rallied outside to protest the cuts. So we wanted to have Carolyn and in to talk about what is going on here. I do want to make just a disclaimer. Probably anyone who listens to this program knows that I'm a graduate of St. Rose, and I'm also an adjunct professor in the communications department. So Carolyn's name is at the bottom of one of my paychecks. but both.
I'm assuming that's a good thing.
Oh, damn right it is. WAMC, but both WAMC and the college felt it was a unique opportunity to have such a conversation. And we agreed that nothing would be off the table and we would have a nice conversation. And I thank you very much for doing that.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's very, very nice to have you. So here's a part of the story that I can't get over, which is you come in April, and then at what point do you know going in that there are financial troubles?
Well, first, I need to tell you I didn't come in April. So I actually.
Well, you were inaugurated in April.
Right, but April. I actually began. I mean, it's pretty typical to be inaugurated 6 months to a year to 18 months after you,
and how
you
long?
Begin. So I actually began, like many college presidents begin, which is on July 1st of 2014.
Yes.
And the inauguration was in April of 15.
Of 15.
Right.
So in that year,
yes.
How much did you know going in? As to the financial woes of the college.
Right. Well, as a presidential candidate, the college shared financial information as well as all kinds of other information with me and the other candidates. And then as you proceed in that process and you become a finalist, you learn more. But I don't believe that the college was really completely aware of the financial situation that existed. And I certainly wasn't when I first took office. But as I got to learn more, once I began the job on July 1st of 14, I started to see that our revenue had, had declined and our expenses were outpacing it. Once I started to ask questions about enrollment, I started to realize that enrollment had really been falling since 2008. So it really wasn't a new problem. Was I surprised? Yes. But was I aware that of the challenges in higher education? Of course I am.
Sure.
And especially at private institutions. It's tough across the country, as I think probably most of your listening audience knows.
Without a doubt. And you mirror the problems that many colleges of St. Rose's size are facing, certainly. I'm just interested in the fact that at some point did you say, oh, well, I didn't know I was getting into this.
Well, of course, but I mean, I've said that before in my professional career.
Well,
you ask a lot of questions and you get the best information that is available, and you make your decision. And my decision was in part a head decision, a professional decision, but my decision was also a heart decision. I had gone through with my husband a year-long program a couple of years before that is funded by the Lilly Foundation and sponsored by the Council of Independent Colleges that helps people who are considering presidencies to figure out if it's really their vocational calling. And there were people who finished that program and decided it wasn't. And my husband and I decided it was right for us. Mm. And then the other part of the program is which type of institution. Because when there's a good match between your values and your experience and your skills and the mission of the institution, you're more likely to be successful. So I made a heart decision as well to come to St. Rose. So, was I surprised? Yes. Was I dissuaded? No. I mean, I feel like things happen in life, whether it's your family or it's your career. And, you've got to sort of deal with the reality and do the best that you can in that situation. And that's what I've been doing.
So you inherit a problem that has been going on for a while,
mm-hmm.
and then you have to deal with it. You
mm-hmm.
have to deal with the aftermath, if you will. And you come up with suggestions. So inevitably, and this happens whenever somebody comes in and says, okay, here are the problems, and now here's what we have to do, and people are going to say, okay, outsider, now what? We've been in this for a long time. What do you know about it? I would think that puts you in a very difficult position.
I don't actually think so, because there was such leadership transition, unfortunately, due to a whole host of, of factors at the college, that I actually felt very well supported by the community when I arrived. And as I started to dig into our situation, I didn't do what probably a lot of presidents would do. I actually made the decision, which would be to put somebody else out front and center. I said, no, I mean, I'm going to be the one who's going to call the all-campus community meetings of staff, faculty, and administrators. And I had many of them throughout my first academic year as I discovered what the financial challenges were. And I talked to the community very honestly about what I was discovering, about the processes we would follow, about the timeline. I made a promise to try to keep people informed. And I fully believe that I have kept that promise. And it hasn't been easy for people. And I don't have any grudges to bear. I haven't been around for a long time.
Right.
You're right. So there's an advantage to being new and to having fresh, you know, perspective on the situation.
But you get a lot of anger towards you that probably isn't fairly.
I don't know about that, but I have to say that in the first year, I didn't feel a lot of anger, even at really, really difficult all-employee meetings because
right.
students weren't there. When I had to announce changes in benefit cuts and other kinds of things that, you know, we had been considering and people knew we were considering, I was amazed by the spirit of the St. Rose community. People actually clapped at those meetings. Now, they weren't clapping because of the changes that were going to hurt them,
right.
because of employees who were going to be let go or what have you, or because some of their colleagues wouldn't be there and they'd have to take on extra work. But they were clapping, I think, because I was telling them the truth and that we were in it together and that we were in a struggle, but one that we were going to succeed at to save the institution and to guarantee its future.
What would have happened had you not refinanced?
Oh, that would have been a very, very difficult situation. But, you know, that's one of the many things that happened last year when the bank that we had a letter of credit with, that agreement was expiring, and they made the decision that they no longer wanted to be involved with the College of St. Rose, and we had to find another bank to work with. So what's important to know is that we were successful in doing that.
Right.
And we closed only a few weeks ago. And as a result of that, we've you know, we have a 10-year agreement, and we've reduced our interest rate, so we're going to have savings. Now, I want to be really, you know, honest with you and with your listeners. We didn't do that to save interest. We did it because we had to. We had to refinance that
debt.
That's
why I asked
but
the question.
The byproduct is that we were able to save interest as well.
Because it could have been. I'm not saying it would have been, but it could have been catastrophic had you not.
Sure. Of course. Yeah. Of course.
So.
But, you know, saying things like that, it's true, but it just makes people feel anxious. And I'm more of a glass half full kind of a person.
Okay.
So, you know, yes, it was a very difficult, arduous process that we went through, but we succeeded at it. We've succeeded at amazing fundraising. We've succeeded at a lot. We've got a great institution.
So now I'm going to tell you something that you know, but I'm interested in your thoughts on it, which is that you have a faculty that is also feeling some anxiety because they're waiting for this announcement as to what stays and what goes, which will come this month sometime, correct?
If the trustees choose to act.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that meeting is upcoming. So there is also, I know you have heard this, that there is a feeling that a lot of this is done, but perhaps the level of communication is not as high as it could have been. I ask the question because I'm interested in are the two connected of the refinancing and trying to get the fiscal house in order and also being open with the college community as to what's happening so you alleviate some of that stress that has been the case?
I think that's a very sophisticated question, and I appreciate it. And the truth of the matter is that we were, I mean, I have worked very hard in my communication with faculty. And as soon as faculty came back, they were invited to participate in this process. Where the communication was less robust was with groups that generally are not involved in these kinds of conversations about academic curriculum. And yes, you know, we had
students, well, adjuncts.
Well, not necessarily adjuncts, but just the community at large.
Okay.
Because when you're trying, you know, to when you're getting ready to have a meeting with Moody's about your credit rating, or you're trying to refinance debt, or you're trying to do something big like that, there's, you know, negative press does not help.
Right.
You know, you're asking people to believe in your future, to look at the multi-year plan that we created. And when you have all of the, if you have a lot of voices out there saying, oh, you know, they're not telling us the truth, or it's really not going to work out that way, you know, people can reconsider their willingness to commit to the college. But with regard to the faculty, my intention and my actions both demonstrate that I was completely willing to work with the faculty. So from the beginning, we followed the faculty manual, which is what we are required to do. And the provost met with all the faculty in their school meetings. I sent an email to the representative committee of the faculty, which is what I'm required to do. I scheduled meetings because by that point, our provost, unfortunately, had resigned at the beginning of September. So I took on the role of the provost for several months, as well as being the president. And, you know, I scheduled weekly meetings with that representative committee of the faculty. It was never my intention that that would be the only times that committee would meet. Normally, that committee only meets with the president or the provost once a semester. So meeting every week is a lot, and they usually meet on their own. They requested 14 data sets, I mean, enormous amounts of information, which we provided. And then after three meetings, they went to the faculty and said, we don't want to participate in this process anymore, and asked the faculty to vote on a resolution saying, we will not work with the administration on this process. But as I told Benita Zahn, I mean, I didn't give up. I used every meeting that I could, every committee meeting, office hours, every avenue possible to try to continue to engage faculty in the process.
Do you understand their concern and anxiousness?
I understand concern and anxiousness, but I also think that there is a wide variety of opinions out there. I think overall, people are anxious. Who wouldn't be? It's a tough time at our institution. It's a tough time in higher education, right? But I think there's a wide variety of opinions out there. I think many people understand that with a drop of over 800 students since 2008 and more faculty, they understand that we're a nonprofit, right? We're not out to make money, but we still have to have a balanced budget. I get many emails on a daily basis from people saying, I'm with you, you know, it's very hard, but stick with it. It's for the good of the institution. So I think there's a variety of opinions out there.
I had this note in front of me, and I now can't find the number. But the year you were you were hoping to get things, have this ship righted by 2020?
2019. By 2019, that's what we told the banks
four years.
We did our presentations as part of the bond debt refinancing, that we had to show them, as well as to the trustees, you know, we had to show them as well, a multi-year financial plan for how we're going to get things back to a balanced budget. And that's pretty quick, given the amount of our deficit.
The community has come out, and as I mentioned, there have been rallies. There have been you have posted and been very open on Facebook, and yet people certainly have been very active in responding to that. Which to me, that is the good news, that you have a community that is so involved.
Mm-hmm. It is good. Of course it's good.
So then you move on from where? The decision will come down, and you will, if the trustees agree, then what happens?
Well, I'm not sure what the trustees are going to decide to do. So, you know, we met on the 20th, and the trustees decided they wanted to deliberate further and they wanted additional information. So they may decide that once again they want additional information and they want to deliberate more, or they may decide to act. I'm not really sure because I'm not a trustee. You know what I mean? So I have to wait to see what's going to happen. I do believe that we made some very, very great progress at the end of my first year as the president of the College of St. Rose. That was very difficult for our community. 23 people were laid off, staff and administrators, 40 positions altogether, as you noted, eliminated. Lots of changes in benefits that really are a cut in compensation for people. Yeah. I mean, and it's been hard for them, but it wasn't enough. And so we absolutely need to do more things. It would be easier for me, I've got to tell you, to just kick the can down the road, right? To say, okay, I didn't know what I was getting into. I came here. I didn't really, you know, no one really understood what it was like. And I'll just go out and find myself another position.
Right.
But I'm not that kind of person. And I mean, I am really calling on the courage of the people who founded this institution and our trustees and our faculty and our staff and our students and our alumni like you who believe in this institution to say it is time that this institution deals with its issues and then we get past it. It's not easy. It causes anxiety. It causes heartache for some. And it makes me sad that that's the case. But what's the alternative, Joe?
Okay. So I want to talk about that.
Sure.
And I want to talk about the alternatives. And I also want to talk about what this means for the programs, which has been a great concern to students and to faculty. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back and continue our conversation. Carolyn Stefanko is our guest. She is the president of the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York. We will continue our conversation after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Upper Hudson Region Christmas Tree Farmers and Wineries, celebrating wine and trees this holiday season. NYWineAndTrees.com for event details. And Zimmer Brothers Jewelers, Poughkeepsie and Rhinebeck, a curated selection of fine and estate jewelry for life's celebrations. Jewelers since 1893, ZimmerBrothers.com.
Ahead on Midday Magazine, the future of high-speed internet is in question with the Massachusetts Broadband Institute at odds with Wired West. At a public meeting in Springfield, MGM asks the Massachusetts Gaming Commission to approve changes to its $950 million casino project. And with temperatures dipping, we'll take a look at Code Blue programs in Saratoga County this winter. Also coming up, the Midday Weather Summary, the Listener Comment Line, Seth Rogovoy with a preview of the weekend's cultural events, and a conversation with a student at Bard who's a Syrian refugee. Midday Magazine begins at noon on WAMC.
Welcome back to the roundtable. Dr. Carolyn Stefanko is our guest this morning, president of the College of St. Rose. We've been talking about the fiscal woes of the college, a $9 million deficit, and a plan in place to eradicate that deficit and also to boost enrollment. The good news is we have a lot of students at that college right now. This was a good year.
It is. It was a very good year, and we have to continue that. I mean, that's our responsibility is to retain the students who we brought in to help them to graduate and to continue to grow. We chose a growth strategy, not a cut strategy.
So the largest incoming class?
It turns out we had a little bit more melt than we wanted, and so it's actually the second largest. It
okay.
was the largest for a couple of days, and now it's the second largest, we have to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
So second largest, and so that's good. So how do you keep that up? Because students who are considering the college look at it and say, "Oh, all right, well, they're going to, you know, are going to be around, and you know what's going to happen." So, how do you deal with that of an incoming class, especially considering it's a college very much based in the community, and to say, "All right, you can trust us."
Well, that's why I'm on the radio with you, because you know that the happy message is really hard to get out there. The focus is often, you know, so much on things that are negative. I mean, we, in order to enroll students, to attract them as applicants, you've got to have programs that they want. You have to serve them, and that's what everything that we're trying to do is about serving students. That's why we exist as an institution, and that's why we've been successful in our community. Right now, we have about 75% of our students in about 25% of our programs. And if we didn't have financial problems, it would be great to just leave things the way they are. But we have students who want to enroll in courses they can't get because we don't have faculty to teach them, and we can't hire them when we have the kind of deficit that we do. We have programs that definitely could grow with enrollment from New York and the Northeast, but also from across the country and around the world. But again, we need to hire more faculty. So this isn't a plan just to cut faculty. It's a plan to help to reduce our deficit and also to reallocate resources so that we can actually hire more faculty in programs that students want to study.
And you have programs that have more faculty than they need.
Well, based on the data that we analyzed, you know, when you see a drop-off of 800 and plus, it's about 15% of our total student body since 2008, yes, that is the case. And that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with the programs or the faculty or the alumni or the current students. And that's what's really sad about it. It's education programs across the country and the education programs, also the teacher education programs in the other schools that have seen most of the drop-off. And that's been true across the country, and it's unfortunate. But, you know, the data that we've used goes back 5 years. We also have market research data. And we know what we also know just based on, you could say, anecdotal evidence. When I go to open house events and I meet prospective students, I ask them always the same questions. Where are they from? You know, why did they choose to come and visit us? What are they interested in studying? You know, all of those kinds of things. And uniformly, they're interested in the same majors over and over and over again. So those are the areas where we can grow. Now, we still have a commitment to the liberal arts, and I hope all of your listeners understand that the phrase liberal arts means liberal arts and sciences. The sciences have always been included. So what does that mean? That means that this is an education. It's not a, you know, it's an education for life. We're not a vocational institution. So everyone who graduates, no matter what their major, has to take a variety of courses to ensure that they have an education for life. They have habits of mind, they have critical thinking skills, and all of that. So I'm from a liberal arts discipline. All of my education is in history. So I am in no way opposed to the liberal arts and sciences. I support that. But, you know, again, when you have a financial problem, you have students who have needs that you can't serve, you've got to look at the data. And unfortunately, because of our finances, think about making some changes.
Back to the enrollment question. Let me ask you, and it'll be a bit of a clunky question because I just want to provide a little bit of background, my background in asking the question, which is when I came to the College of St. Rose and things were still in black and white, it was a place. It was when you first started. You know, I mean, not first started, but you know, you were still new at the men attending, and which was really hard to find a men's room, by the way. But you made that better. And for that, we're forever
change
grateful.
Is good, Joe.
Absolutely, that has been great. You know, people complaining about all those buildings you built, but I got to tell you, it's much better in finding a men's room. Okay, so you come into the college, and the thing that I've loved about St. Rose, and I appreciated it at the time, but over the decades, I've come to appreciate it all the more, is that it was a place where you had a staff and a faculty that was so embracing, would take students and care about them. And they saw me and they saw my skills and they let me do my thing. And they helped and they were so instrumental in what decisions I made, and I could go to them and say, I have this opportunity and I have that opportunity, because I was working at the time, and they made that happen, that I could be a full-time student and be an employee somewhere as well. It was the most beautiful situation, and I've seen that replicated countless times at the college. What I worry about, and I have no reason to think that this is the case, but what I worry about is that somehow in this, that the culture of the place gets screwed up. And I'm just curious as to, I'm not telling you anything that you haven't heard a billion times from people who have graduated from that institution over the decades, but how do we together figure out how to do that with and maintaining the spirit of the place?
Well, I think we are doing that. I mean, I think on a daily basis, that's what the institution is all about. I really do. And I don't, and I, you know, I'm, I, again, you know, if you only read certain Facebook sites or you only watch certain news programs or whatever, you're going to hear the voices that are very critical right now. And I do understand that. It's an anxious time and people are worried. And I wish some of those people had participated more in the process, but they didn't. But on a daily basis, that is what we do. And that's what we're trying to protect. Because, as I said, if we don't take stock of where we are in terms of our finances, we will run out of cash, right? We will be in a very bad place in a very short period of time. So in order to protect the mission and the values and the experience of students, because that's our purpose, is to serve students,
right,
we have to wrap our arms around this problem, and we have to make the changes so that we can continue to provide that kind of transformational experience for students like you, who had to work, like people like me, a third of our student body who are first generation college. I mean, we all, staff and administrators and faculty, I think, are committed. They're committed. They all have different roles that they play in the institution, but we're all committed to serving students and helping them to succeed.
When adjuncts unionized, was that, which I don't know what to make of. I still don't know what to make of it. You know what? I'm a very happy adjunct. I love teaching. I love doing it. So I'm curious as to, so how will they be a part of this change? How will they be a part of this growth? And basically, I'm asking you, so should I plan on still teaching? Do I still have a gig? I really like it.
I hope so, Joe. But okay. I mean, I don't make those kind of decisions.
I figured I got the boss here. I thought I could at least get some sort of.
I really don't make those kind of decisions. So, you know, I believe that the program that you teach in is one that has a tremendous number of majors,
yeah,
and an ability to grow. We have beautiful facilities. We have a lot of support in the community. We have many working professionals, including you, who, you know, you're a rock star of our graduates. And so, you know, I would assume, you know, that you would have employment in the future, but it's not really the kind of call that I can make. You know, our commitment, though, I mean,
who
so,
do I need to talk to? No, go ahead.
I think
no,
you know. Right. I think you okay. know more All than right. I do. Right. You know more than I do. But I will say that our commitment is to provide the best instruction for students. And the college made the decision in the last strategic plan to increase the percentage of tenured and tenured track faculty and to reduce the percentage of part-time faculty, because we want people who are full-time there,
right,
doing the advising and going to the clubs. But there are many, many areas where we need people just like you, because you have the professional experience, which our students greatly need.
We're out of time.
Oh, darn.
But I want to thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I
appreciate it.
And thank our audience for being a part of the program this morning. We'll be back on Monday. Have a great weekend. Thank you.